It's Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, and I'm Dave Sobel. Welcome to the Business of Tech Lounge. Today on the show, we talk about preparedness for CMMC 2.0 with Mike Semmel. We have thoughts on training your technicians to understand the business with Dan Adams, a preview of my interview with Fred Carey, questions and answers from you and listeners, plus following up on Broadcom and VMware partners, McDonald's, Self-Serve, and United Health. I want to thank Sales Builder, our first Patreon vendor sponsor, whose support makes this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. Want to get your logo here? Vendors, you can do so with our Vendor Patreon program, a simple monthly subscription, and visit patreon.com/MSPradio to sign up. I couldn't do this show without support, and thanks again to Sales Builder for theirs. Now, I do take questions and comments throughout the show, so make sure to put them in chat. I have a dedicated questions section in the show with listener-submitted questions. So get them in chat, and we'll get to them a little later. And now, our top story. This may not seem like a technology one, but bear with me. The National Association of Realtors has agreed to settle a lawsuit and change how real estate agents are paid, moving from a standard commission to a negotiable one. This could lead to increased competition and new business models in the real estate market, potentially lowering costs for sellers. The settlement could also reduce conflicts of interest by eliminating the requirement for sellers to advertise the buyer agent commission. The changes could be implemented as early as July, but as with all significant changes, it's expected to take some time. In the post-settlement world, the method of payment for buyer agents is a bit uncertain, with possibilities including a flat fee, a percentage of the sales price, or the seller covering the fee. Future home sellers and online or discount real estate brokerages stand to benefit, but the situation for first-time buyers and those on tight budgets is less clear, as they may have to pay out of pocket for a real estate agent. So we arrive at the tech angle. The real estate industry could be disrupted by AI bots replacing buyers' brokers, providing a more reliable service at a fraction of the cost. The U.S. currently has a surplus of mediocre realtors. Per the National Association of Realtors in a 2015 report, quote, the real estate industry is saddled with a large number of part-time, untrained, unethical, and/or incompetent agents. An AI trained on the actions of good brokers could quickly forward new listings, handle documents and payments, and answer questions 24/7. While they couldn't conduct home visits, they could recommend local inspectors. So why do we care? Think about this for a moment. If a robot can provide most of the value at a fraction of the price, it could be an attractive option for many. And that moment of disruption is why we care. That's what makes it a technology story. Did the lawsuit change the market for enough human realtors to offer enough value to stay ahead of the AI change? Consider the taxi industry, which didn't see change coming and offered a substandard product for too long. The realtor industry knew it had a problem 9 years ago. Both of those are stories that tell us of what's happened before, with industries that have waited too long to adjust for a technological change. And the lesson for IT services companies is not to fall into the same trap, potentially where AI and automation can replace too much of the value offered, and you've got to make sure to stay ahead of that. Now, as we think about training techs, let's talk a little bit more here. Dan Adams released a book late last year, The Tech Nerd's Guide to Career Success. It's a parable book, and I revisited it again myself just recently. I asked Dan who he was targeting when he wrote this book.
Problem caused by the default belief that so many of us have in the industry, and especially if you come from the technical service side like I did, the belief is that success comes from having great tech skills and then making the client happy, customer service skills. And if you do those two things, then career success kind of follows. But after a period of time, you see so many people with phenomenal tech skills and they kill themselves trying to make the client happy, and it doesn't tie directly to success. They're getting by. They're not incredibly successful, even though they're strong in those two areas. And you look around and you see that there's other individuals and organizations that are experiencing a high level of success, and they're doing things a little differently. They've got some understanding and knowledge above those two key points. The Tech Nerd's Guide for Career Success was written to identify what these are, to clarify them, and to unify everybody on what those drivers are. And the seven lessons that are in this are delivered in a easily consumable parable, and they are targeted at not just the owner. They're targeted at every individual in the organization. It doesn't matter if you're an entry-level position, if you're a manager, or an upper leader. So everyone in the organization can comprehend and understand and leverage what those drivers are for greater business and financial success in a professional service. So the book helps not only the business increase their results and their performance, but every individual has the ability to improve their career success as well.
I wonder if I should start a book club. So let's ask the question, why do we care? Dan's book made me revisit the idea of how you distill training into your organization and how you help make sure your technical teams understand what it is your organization delivers and ultimately how you make money. One of those things that you think about a lot is keeping your people invested and engaged in what you do. Consider how you give career advice to your teams in your organization. Now, I want to note that giving someone a book and walking away isn't what's effective in the way this is delivered. You need to make sure you're incorporating this as part of a training program. But Dan's book was unique because it's focused on something that you can give to your technical teams themselves versus something that's purely targeted at the owner. Most sales and businesses books really are focused right at those leadership roles. And Dan's book was a little different here, and I wanted to highlight it. A reminder, we are going to be continuing to take questions, and I'm watching the chat, so we'll make this a conversation, particularly during our question sections. Now, I want to revisit the interview from this past weekend. On the weekends, I release interview episodes, and we have an opportunity to discuss them here on the live show. Let's hear from Mike Semmel from the weekend about what might happen due to CMMC 2.0 preparedness. Specifically about this. Won't this just fracture the market into those providers that are capable of delivering in the defense industry and those that aren't?
Well, yeah, I think it will. And I think there are several things that, you know, I'm anticipating are going to happen. First of all, there will be some MSPs that simply say, we're not going to do this, can't afford it and all that. We only have one defense contractor. When I started in the compliance business, I was an MSP in the early 2000s when HIPAA came out. I learned about HIPAA. I went and got a training class and passed a certification test on HIPAA and stayed as an MSP. We didn't change any of the products and services we were offering, but we promoted them as HIPAA compliant services. So we took compliance and used that as a differentiator. I didn't have to prove to anybody I was a best in class MSP because nobody saw us as an MSP. They saw us as a risk management company focused on compliance. One of the things I did back then was I took all of our rates across every client in every industry and increased them enough to cover the costs that I had to incur for the healthcare industry because I didn't want to pay for it out of my own pocket. So when somebody says, well, it's $100,000 and I only have one customer, I get that, but I would never take the $100,000 and just say it's for one customer. I'd increase my rates across the board. And the reason that I think this is so important is that you're going to be beating a lot of other companies that can't answer the bell. And if you don't do it, I think this is the opening where we have all these MSPs that have consolidated through mergers and acquisitions. I don't know if you want to call them a super MSP or a mega MSP. I see those guys as really being able to take advantage of this because they, if they had like 20 locations, they could take one location, get it fully certified for CMMC, spread that across all 20 of their markets, but then they could come into your market and not just take the defense contractors that need your help. That's their wedge to get into your market and take away the rest of your business. So I think there's a big risk to the MSPs that, you know, are kind of afraid of this or aren't ready to do this. It's a big moment in time for the industry.
Now, you brought up the tool providers. I mean, I would have every expectation that they want to have their tools delivered and used by defense contractors. Are you expecting them to just get it together and deliver on doing a certification and getting FedRAMP authorization and delivering their cloud in a way that the government will consume?
I think eventually, but when you say just getting FedRAMP certification, that's taking years to get right now. And the challenge that everybody has is that CMMC is going to be in contract starting in 2025. So my concern is that the names we all know in this industry are not ready. They're not talking about we're the guys you need to come to, and here's what we're doing to build a CMMC compliant product. Remember, this regulation was only published at the end of December. So we're just over a month from that. But I've talked to several of these dual companies, and they are not ready for this. So it's easy to say, yeah, get FedRAMP.
So we have to ask, why do we care? Mike brings up an interesting angle to think about wedge competition and how CMMC might help certain MSPs differentiate themselves, particularly if you layer on the idea of private equity-backed MSPs who might have more money to play with or be able to invest in some of those programs a little bit more differently. Mike lays out a scenario of competition where he's worried about one provider being able to use it and move into your different market by certifying each of their different spaces. That's not necessarily the only way this might play out. Of course, this is an element where those providers that have invested in CMMC 2.0 compliance may put themselves in a much better place to be competitive. That could be the element that Mike sees. Now, the other piece that he touched on that I want to lean a little bit more into is the MSP tool vendors themselves and preparedness. As far as I've seen, none of the major platform players that service typical SMB managed services market have made themselves FedRAMP compliant and don't seem to have any apparent plan to do so. So this puts them in a position where they're not necessarily able to support solution providers and technology service providers that are interested in going after those markets. We may end up in a situation where there is more fractured market to what we're seeing. Those companies that are able to go after those deals are going to be very clearly separated, not just based on their own capabilities, but the tool choices they make. We may end up in a space where you're not able to take on federal contracting because of the tools that you've chosen, even if you yourself get to the point of being ready for that. And for vendors that talk about enabling their providers to be best in class and service in the industry, this is an apparent gap that they haven't taken on. It could make federal contracting more lucrative, or it could also move it out of reach of smaller companies. Maybe they're going to be relied much more on those prime contractors or have to give complete control over to them. This is one of those areas where I've got a lot of questions for those leaders in both managed services companies that are looking to take this on, but also in the vendor software providers that are looking at this space. I think we should consider how much we care, particularly if we're concerned about fracturing the market. If you got a question or a comment, do make sure to put it into the chat. And remember, I am going to be taking questions after our story roundup. Now, I want to dive in to a couple of other stories that have happened that I want to follow up on. Ars Technica reports Broadcom CEO Hock Tan acknowledges the unease among VMware customers and their partners after the sweeping changes implemented since Broadcom's acquisition. The changes include taking over VMware accounts, ending the VMware Channel Partner Program, and discontinuing perpetual licensing. These changes have disrupted businesses and led to significant price increases. Tan defends the subscription-only licensing model and believes the changes will bring greater profitability and market opportunities. However, concerns remain among customers and partners. And a late-breaking addition to this story. As I was preparing for this live broadcast, there's additional reporting. Per reporting in the Register today, Broadcom has reportedly offered a peace offering to some VMware customers after terminating the cloud service provider program. The company has introduced a white label program that allows cloud providers to continue operating by partnering with established affiliates, preserving those existing partnerships and ensuring VMware services continue to serve customers. However, it remains to be seen if this move will boost VMware's profitability, as some customers have already switched to other hypervisor alternatives. I also have a follow-up on a story I covered last year. The Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice have requested the U.S. Copyright Office to exempt commercial soft-serve machines from the anti-circumvention rules of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or DMCA. This would allow for more third-party and self-repair options, greater competition in the repair market, and prevent companies from using DMCA laws to enforce repair monopolies. The joint comment builds upon a petition filed by repair vendor iFixit and interest group Public Knowledge, focused on the notoriously broken McDonald's soft-serve ice cream machines supplied by Taylor. The article also mentions the broader exemptions for industrial and commercial repairs that require software tinkering and the ongoing push for right to repair reforms. United Health is facing increasing calls for accountability following a cyber attack on one of its subsidiaries, Change Healthcare. The attack has caused widespread disruption in the healthcare industry, highlighting concerns about cybersecurity and the lack of oversight in critical infrastructure. Experts point to United Health's extensive control over medical claims processing as a potential vulnerability, while others criticize the lack of consequences for such a significant breach. The attack's impact may have been exacerbated by federal guidelines governing electronic data exchange, which concentrated the use of Change Healthcare systems. Pressure is mounting on United Health to take responsibility and support affected providers. Now, why do we care? Let's talk first on Broadcom, getting lessons on how to work with the channel. Interesting to think the pressure from their partners has caused them to backtrack and offer new offerings. If you think the vendors aren't listening, note they are. When noise gets that loud, they'll make sure to react. Now, it may not seem ice cream relates to IT services, but it's the monitoring and repair toolkit portion of the story that I care about. The diagnostic software supplied not only by the manufacturer, but by an independent provider as well as a competitive advantage. And if you own your own gear, you want the option of being able to repair it and service it yourself. This is very critical to right to repair, and I like the stories that are very relatable to lawmakers. We understand the problem of the McDonald's soft serve ice cream machine being down. It's very relatable, and it's easy to see adjustments. The only thing that concerns me was that one-time exception versus trying to legislate much more broadly. Now, United Health feels like a bit of an underreported story. That's why I wanted to focus on it. They're only now getting their feet under them, and this was a massive disruption to billing and patient servicing. The big key thing we're looking for is accountability. It's not enough to see pressure. Will we see true accountability for what they've encountered and how they've managed the crisis? We are taking questions. Make sure you can submit them. You can still do so in the chat window, or submit for next week if you're watching the recording. Make sure to send them to question@mspradio.com or post them now and we'll take them. Remember, bring your questions live and you'll get a live response. I really do enjoy taking questions. And of course, if you don't want to, make sure to submit them ahead of time. Let's go ahead and take our first question.
What is your take on the potential collision of the printer and copier companies that seem to be considering the managed services world? I keep seeing this over and over. They try to take their copier repair guys, provide a few certs, and then dispatch them. Is this a threat?
I love this question. And I love this question because I've heard it before. In fact, multiple times. History continues to repeat itself. I'm going to think back to my early days as a managed services provider myself in the circa 2005-2006 timeframe, when we had this exact conversation about the print world coming into the IT and managed services world. This conversation comes up regularly as new providers look to come into the space. Telecommunications providers try their hand at it. Printer and office supply companies come in and try their hands at it. Note that it's all about execution. This makes perfect sense for them to move into much more valuable spaces. And it's going to be a matter of how well they're able to execute and build up their business. But like any provider, they're going to be able to do that themselves only based on their ability to build up their business. They have the advantage of an install base that they can go after, but they are the same in terms of thinking about building up their capacity here in managed services. So from my perspective, this is going to be a continual threat to those pure play technology service providers to consider the way that they want to position with their customers. This happens over and over and over again. And you'll see it not just from the printer copier guys, but from the telecommunication guys and from any of the related industries around technology services. In fact, I would argue that the bigger threat is overall automation coming into the space versus those ones that are looking just like pure play providers moving in. I really appreciate the question. If you've got any additional ones, make sure to throw them into the chat and we will definitely make sure to take them. And if you missed it and you're catching us on the recording, go ahead and send it in at question@msbradio.com. Let's take a moment. We're going to go ahead and preview what's coming this weekend. I spoke with Fred Carey in a very lively conversation. He focuses on cash flow over profits. Here's a preview.
Prepping to talk to you is really fascinating to understand, you know, your philosophy on business. One of the things you really emphasize is the importance of cash flow over profits. And I find that kind of striking because it's an interesting approach. I appreciate the idea of managing cash flow. Obviously, you can take that to a real extreme. We both know that a cash flow business without profit isn't the goal, you know, because you got great cash flow, but no profit. Walk me through your thinking and how you balance it and where your emphasis is for entrepreneurs.
Yeah, generally, especially as entrepreneurs with smaller businesses, you know, $1-3 million businesses, we're looking at the paper that's showing us all the contracts and deals that we're getting in. And we're thinking that this is amazing. We're doing great. But a lot of times the cash from those business doesn't come in when the contract does. And so when we're looking at, oh, on paper today, on my P&L, I'm doing really well. But in my bank account, I have $78. The reality is the very first thing, and the very first thing I tell any CFO that I bring on board to work for me is don't let me run out of money. And that's what you get. When you start focusing on your cash flow, then you can utilize your skills in the finance part of things to make sure that business keeps growing robustly. The problem is even worse when you have a really well-performing business. But let's suppose your technology company and your month after month, you're doubling. And so now you're looking at this $10,000 invoice statement and you're going hooray for it, but you're using last month's cash paid for this month's expenses. And if you got twice as much business in the following month, that cash is not going to pay for the expenses that you're going to have as you're growing to that level. So always be mindful of the cash you have in the bank, the cash that's coming in, despite what your P&L says. You can have a great P&L and run out of money and be out of business.
A reminder for listeners, my Patreon supporters already have this video, and you can get all my interview content early as a supporter. Visit patreon.com/MSBradio and sign up now. I want to thank Sales Builder, our first Patreon vendor supporter, whose support makes this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. Vendors, you too can get your name mentioned on the live show. It's a monthly subscription. Visit patreon.com/MSPradio to learn more and sign up. And listeners, you too can support the show in lots of ways. Like, share, and follow on your favorite platforms. Helping encourage others to listen is a great way to support the show. You can support directly on Patreon with our Give What You Want model. You set what you think the content is worth. And if you have a question or listening to the recording, send it in at question@MSPradio.com. Really appreciate you joining me for this Business of Tech Lounge, and I will see you next week.